welcome to the Cory Doctorow podcast. Sorry I missed you last week. As you know, if you're listening regularly, I was in Washington, D.C. for a series of events, the American Library Association coffee night presentation at the New America Foundation, and a reading at Red Emma's bookstore in Baltimore. And all of them went really well. It was so nice to see so many of you readers out there and to get to talk to so many of you and to hear all the nice things you had to say and to get a chance to say more things to you. If you'd like, you can go to craphound.com and see the video of my talk at New America Foundation along with the Q&A. So since I've gotten back, I've had quite a busy time. I just had some minor back surgery, trying to do something about this ridiculous sciatica that, you know, I've tried everything with. I've had, Feldenkrais and acupuncture and Alexander technique and physiotherapy and a different kind of physiotherapy and massage and a different kind of acupuncture with electricity and pills and hanging upside down by my ankles and yoga and, like, you name it, I've had it. And finally, the physio and the doc said, you know, it's not going to get any better so long as the nerves are inflamed and you're always in pain and you can't do good work. So I went into the hospital on Friday and had a x-ray guided epidural injection of steroid into the nerve root, which was quite a major procedure, as it turns out. The doc was really good, and the techs were really good, too. It actually was very efficiently handled, and honestly, the least pleasant part of the whole experience was recovering with daytime television, where somehow they managed to have 20 channels where the best thing on television was Everybody Loves Raymond. It really made me wish that I was still sedated, but there you go. So anyway, I've got 3 or 4 days until the steroid theoretically kicks in and makes the nerve calm down and all the pain go away, and I'll let you know next week what's happening with that. If it does work, well then, the physio begins again in earnest, otherwise they may try and do my facet joints next, which, after that, if that doesn't work, I don't know what they do. I guess, you know, maybe I send my back in for warranty service or something. Hard to say. Anyway, I'm more or less glad about this. It's pretty cool to know that theoretically something is going to change substantially for the better with my back. I'm actually very, very happy to know that. In about a week, on July the 7th or July the 8th, so later this week actually, the British editions of my first three novels come out from HarperCollins. They are reprinting Down and Out in the Magic Kingdom, Eastern Standard Tribe, and Someone Comes to Town, Someone Leaves Town, with snazzy paperback British covers. They're actually my first mass market paperbacks. They look terrific. I've got a couple of boxes of all of them here, and I can't wait for them to come out. We're celebrating all these British releases, the paperback of Makers, these three paperbacks, and For the Win, with a big event in London on the 20th of July. I'm going to be doing a joint event with China Mayville, courtesy of Clerkenwell Tales. And again, if you go to craphound.com, you'll find information on how to RSVP for that, because it's they are trying to get some numbers so they can figure out how big a venue they're going to need and where to hold it. If you can't come to Clerkenwell Tales on the 20th of July and you're in London, I hope I will see you at OrgCon on the 24th of July. That's the Saturday. The Open Rights Group is having its first annual convention. I'm going to be one of the speakers, along with a roster of some very, very interesting people and many interesting attendees, people who care about the same stuff as you and I do. So if you can't make it to Clerkenwell Tales, OrgCon's your place, and you can find out more at openrightsgroup.org. And lastly, I thought I would mention that I'm going to be away for all of August, from July 29th through August 29th. I'm going to be back in Canada at an undisclosed location on a lake with my family, doing nothing. No internet, no email, no phones, just me, the kid, the family, hanging out, seeing cows, swimming in a lake, and doing nothing for the first time in a really long time. And gosh, I got to tell you, I'm really, really looking forward to that. All right. You know what? No, tell a lie. I will mention what's coming up after that. So when I get back on the 29th of August from Canada, I've got a couple of days, and then I fly back out to Australia, to Melbourne, for the Melbourne Writers Festival and the World Science Fiction Convention. So those of you in Australia, I hope to see you there. And then when I get back again, starting on the 13th of September, I'm going on a 14-city tour of Germany, courtesy of my German publisher. And then I'll be in the Netherlands for a couple of days towards the end of September. So I'll have more details as those dates creep up. But if you're in the Netherlands or in Germany or in Melbourne, I hope to see you in one of those places too. Well, that's enough of that. On to some more of I Love Paris, the short story that I wrote with Michael Skeet. Best not to describe the bus ride to the recruitment center in too much detail. They packed us like cattle, and some of the more dose-trustafarians freaked out, and at least one tried to pick my pocket. I held Sissy tight to my chest, her hat and jacket squashed between us, and murmured soothing noises at her. Sissy was fallen silent, shaking into my chest. 100 years later, the bus rolled to a stop, and 100 years after that, the doors hissed open and the trustafarians tumbled out. I waited until the rush was over, then led Sissy off the bus. "What's going on, Lee?" she said, finally. She had a look that I recognized. It was the cogitation face I got when I started chewing on a work problem. "Looks like the Freres have decided to draft some new recruits. Don't worry, I'll get it sorted out. We'll be out of here before you know it." A group of Freres was herding the crowd through two doors, the women on one side, the men on the other. One of them moved to separate Sissy from me. "Friend, please," I said. "She's scared. She's my mother's niece. I have to take care of her. Please, I'd like to see the CO. Commandant Ledoid is a friend of mine. He'll sort it out." Pierre made like he didn't hear. I didn't bother offering him a bribe. A grunt like this would like as not take all your money and pretend he'd never seen your face. The one in the power armor were the elite, with some shred of decency. These guys were retarded sadists. He simply pulled Sissy by the arm until we were separated, then shoved her into the woman's line. I sighed and comforted myself with the fact that at least he hadn't kicked me in the nuts for mouthing off. The women were marched around the corner. To what? They had their own entrance? Sissy vanished. It took an effort of will to keep from smoking while I queued, but I had the sense that maybe I'd be here a long time and should hold on to them. A shuffling eternity later, I was facing a sergeant in a crisp uniform, his jaw shaved blue, his manner professionally alert. "Bonsoir," he said. On impulse, I decided to pretend that I didn't speak French. I needed any leverage I could get. You learn that in my line of work. Hi. Your name, monsieur? He had a wireless clipboard whose logo marks told me it had been liberated from the Walmart on the Champs-Élysées. Lee Rosen. He scribbled quickly on the board. Nationality? Canadian. Residence. 30 Rue Texas, number 33. The sergeant smiled. The Trustafarian quarter. Yes, that's right. And you? Are you a Trustafarian? I was wearing a white linen suit, my hair was short and neat, and I was in my early 30s. No point in insulting his intelligence. No, sir. Ah, he said, as though I had made a particularly intelligent riposte. The hint of a smile played over his lips. I decided that maybe I liked this guy. He had style. I'm a researcher, a freelance researcher. Jean-Marc, bring a chair, he said in French. I pretended to be surprised when the goon at the door dropped a beautiful, chrome-inlaid oak chair beside me. The sergeant gestured, and I sat. A researcher. What sort of research do you do, Monsieur Rosen? Corporate research. Ah, he said again. He smiled beneficently at me and picked up a pack of Marlboros from his desk, offered one to me. I took it and puffed it alight, pretended to be calm. I haven't seen an American cigarette in my whole time in Paris. There are certain advantages to serving in the Pro Tem Authority. He took a deep drag. He smiled at me again. Fatherly. Man, he was good. Tell me, what is it that you are called upon to research in your duties as a freelance corporate researcher? What the hell? It was bound to come out eventually. I work in competitive intelligence. Ah, he said. I see. Espionage. Not really. He raised an eyebrow dubiously. I mean it. I don't crouch in the bushes with a camera or tap phones. I analyze patterns. Yes, patterns. Please, go on. I'd polished the speech on a million uncomprehending relatives, so I switched to autopilot. Say I manufacture soap. Say you're my competition. Your head office is in Konya, and your manufacturing is outsourced to a subcontractor in Azerbaijan. I want to stay on top of what you do, so I spend a certain amount of time every week looking at new listings in Konya and its suburbs. I also check every change of address to Konya. These names go into a pool that I cross-reference to the alumni registries of the top 100 chemical engineering programs and the index of articles in chemical engineering trade magazines. By keeping track of who you're hiring and what their specialty is, I can keep an eye on what your upcoming projects are. When I see a load of new hires, I start paying very close attention, and then I branch out. Since you are in the same business, it wouldn't be extraordinary for me to call up your manufacturing subcontractor and ask them if they'd be interested on bidding on certain large jobs. I set these jobs up such that I can test the availability of every type of apparatus they use, dish detergent, hand soap, lotion, and so on. Likewise, I can invite your packaging suppliers and teamsters to bid on jobs. Once I determine that you are, for example, launching a line of laundry detergent in the next month or so, I am forearmed. I can go to the major retail outlets, offer them my completing laundry detergent below cost, on the condition that they sign a 6-month exclusivity deal. A few weeks later, you roll out your new line, but none of the retailers can put it on their shelves. Ah, the sergeant said. He stared pensively over my shoulder, out the door, where a queue of Trustafarians waited in exhausted silence. Ah, he said again. He turned to his clipboard, and I waited while his stylus scritched over its surface for several minutes. You can take him now. Be gentle to him, he said in French. Thank you, Monsieur Rosen. This has been educational. Day 2. Bend over and say, Ah! They dump me in a makeshift barracks, a locked office with 4 zonked-out Trustafarians already sleeping on the industrial gray carpet. I rolled my jacket into a pillow, stuck my shoes underneath it, and eventually slept. I was wakened by sleepy footfalls in the hallway, punctuated with the thudding steps of power armor. I was waiting by the door when a Frere in power armor unlocked it and opened it. He hit the spotlights on his shoulder and flooded the room with harsh light. I forced myself to keep my eyes open and stood still until my pupils adjusted. My roommates rolled over and groaned. Get up, power armor said. Up your shithole, one of the Trustaforians moaned. He pulled his jacket over his head. Power armor moved to him with mechanical swiftness, grabbed him by one shoulder, and hauled him upright. The Trustafarian howled, Motherfucker! I'll kick your ass! I'll sue your ass! Put me down! Power armor dropped him, then surveyed the others. They'd all struggled to their feet. The one with the potty mouth was rubbing his shoulder and glaring furiously. Vitmarsch, power armor suggested, and followed us out into the corridor. He wasn't kidding about the vit part, either. He moved us at a brisk trot up the stairs, easily pacing us. When I came to Paris, this office building had been a see-through, completely empty. A few years later, a developer had reclaimed it, renovated it, and gone bankrupt. Now it was finally tenanted. We finally emerged onto a roof easily 6 stories high, ringed with barbed wire, with a view of one of the cathedral domes and lots of crumbly little row houses. Other conscriptees were already on the roof, men and women, but I couldn't find Sissy. Burly frères were in position around the roof, wearing sidearms. Some stood on cherry pickers raised several meters off the roof. With rifles on tripods, they swept the rooftop, then the street below, then the rooftop again. I wondered how they got the cherry pickers onto the roof in the first place, then spotted a cluster of power-armored frères and figured it out. These boys would each just take a corner and jump. Beat the hell out of block and tackle. You will queue up to receive temporary uniforms, one of the power armors broadcasted. I was right at the front of the line. A frere sized me up and pulled the zips open on several duffels, then tossed me a shirt and a pair of pants. I hurried down the queue to a table laden with heavy, worn combat boots. They stank of their previous owners and evoked a little shudder for me. Jesus shit, are we supposed to fucking wear these? The voice had a familiar Yankee twang. I didn't need to turn around to see that it was my roommate, Potty Mouth. He was carrying his uniform under one arm, and holding the other one at his side, painfully. The smile vanished from the frere's face. He picked up the smelliest, most worn pair and passed it to him. Put these on, friend, now. His voice was low and dangerous, and his accent made the words almost unintelligible. I am not gonna put these on, you fucking frog shit. Put them on yourself. Potty Mouth looked to be about 20, maybe a year older than Sissy, and he had a bull's neck and thick muscular arms and gave off a road rage vibe I associate with steroidal athletes. He dropped the uniform and picked up one of the boots and pitched it straight into the Frere's face with a whistling snap that sliced the air. The Frere plucked it from the sky with chemically enhanced reflexes and shot it right back at Potty Mouth. It nailed him square in the forehead. Potty's head snapped back hard, and I winced in sympathy as he crumpled to the ground. I stepped away, hoping to melt back into the crowd. The sergeant from the night before blocked my way, along with the Frere who'd thrown the boot. "Get him out of the way, Monsieur Rosen," the sergeant said. "We can't move him," I extemporized. "He might have a spinal injury. Please." The sergeant's smile stayed fixed, but it grew hard and a little cruel. "Monsieur Rosen, you are new recruits. New recruits don't question orders." The Frere who'd thrown the boot cracked his knuckles. I picked Potty Mouth under his dripping armpits and hauled him over the gravel, trying to support his head and biting back the urge to retch as his sweat poured over my hands. At this rate, I'd be out of steri-wipes in a very short time. I wiped my hands off on his shirt and crouched next to him. The Trustafarians were reluctantly moving their clothes and putting them into rip-stop shopping bags with Exxon logos, shivering in the cold. Women Frere's did the girls, still no sign of Sissy, and men did the boys, all nice and above board. A Frere came over to us, dropped two bags, and said, "Strip." I started to protest, but caught the eye of the sergeant, standing by one of the cherry pickers. Resignedly, I stripped off my clothes and bagged them, then bagged my uniform along with them, and sealed it shut. "This one too," the Frere said, kicking Potty Mouth in the ribs. Potty Mouth jerked and grunted, his jaw lolled open. I began to mechanically strip Potty Mouth of his stinking neoprene and spandex muscle wear. I was beyond caring about microbes at this point. The Frere watched me, grinning all the while. I wondered how I ended up babysitting this spoiled roid head and stared at my feet. Four Freres in power armor sailed onto the roof from the road below, carrying an ambulance bus at the corners. They set it down, popped the doors, and a cadre of white-coated medics poured out. The one who impersonally groped my balls for hernias and stuck me with several none-too-sterile needles needed a shower, and his white coat could have used a cleaning, too. When he bent over to check out Potty Mouth, his pocket bulged open, and I saw a collection of miniature bottles of Johnny Walker Red. He popped me in the corner with some kind of mutant staple gun that stung like filth. "What's wrong with this one?" he said, speaking for the first time. "Maybe a concussion, maybe a spinal. I think his shoulder's dislocated." The medic disappeared into the bus for a moment, then re-emerged in a leaded apron, lugging a bulky apparatus. I realized with a start that it was a portable x-ray and scrambled to get behind him. "No spinal, no concussion," he pronounced after a long moment staring into the apparatus's eyepiece. "Okay," the medic said to himself and made a tick on a wireless clipboard. The medics bugged out the way they'd come in, and the Frere's withdrew with rapid military precision up the cherry pickers. I had a pretty good idea what was coming next, but it still shocked a curse from my lips. The Frere's and the cherry pickers all harnessed up giant blowers and turned loose a stinging mist of sinus-burning disinfectant down on us. Trustafarians, male and female, screamed and ran for the barbed wire, then turned and ran back into the center. Above me, I heard the Frere's laughing. I stood my ground and let myself get soaked once, twice, a third time. I was about to make sure that Potty Mouth was lying on his side when he groaned and sat up. "Fuck!" he shouted. He scrambled groggily to his feet, careered into me, righted himself, and wobbled uncertainly as the last of the spray settled over him. The disinfectant evaporated quickly, leaving my skin feeling tight and goose-pimply. Potty Mouth swung his head around with saurian sloth. He focused on me and grabbed my shoulder. "The fuck are you doing to me, fag?" His grip tightened, grinding my collarbone. "Chill out," I said placatingly. "We're in the same boat. We're drafted." "Where are my clothes?" "In that bag. We had to strip while they sprayed us. Look, could you let go of my shoulder?" He did. "You may be drafted, bro, but not me. I'm leaving." He popped the seal on his bag and struggled into his civvies. "Look, there's no percentage in this. Just keep calm and let this thing sort itself out. You're going to get yourself killed." Potty Mouth ignored me and took off toward the door we'd used to get onto the roof. He kicked it three times before it splintered and gave. I looked up at the Frere's and the cherry pickers. They were watching him calmly. A small, wiry Frere was waiting behind the door as Potty Mouth kicked in. He stepped out grinning. Potty Mouth threw a punch at the Frere's solar plexus. The Frere woofed a little, but didn't lose his grin. Pottymouth grappled with him, lifting the smaller man off his feet. The Frere took the beating for what seemed like a long time, merely twisting to avoid the groin and face shots that Pottymouth aimed. The Trustafarians on the roof were all silent, watching, shivering. Finally, the Frere had had enough. He broke free of Pottymouth's grip on his arms with ease, and as he dropped to the ground, smashed Pottymouth in both ears simultaneously. Pottymouth reeled, and the little Frere aimed a series of hard, wicked-fast blows at his ribs. I heard cracking. Pottymouth started to fall, but the Frere caught him, picking him up over his head, then pile-drivered him into the gravel. He lay unmoving there, head at an angle that suggested he wouldn't be getting up any time soon. The Freres and the cherry pickers scrambled down. One of them slung Pottymouth over his shoulder like a sack of potatoes and carried him down the stairs. The little Frere who'd killed him stepped back into the doorway, pulling the broken door shut behind him. "Get dressed," broadcasted a power armor. All right then, talk to you next week.
You've been listening to the Cory Doctorow Podcast, licensed under Creative Commons Attribution, Non-Commercial, Share-alike US 3.0. Or as Woody Guthrie put it in another context, this song is copyrighted in the US under Seal of Copyright 154085 for a period of 28 years, and anyone caught singing it without our permission will be a mighty good friend of ourn, because we don't give a dern. Publish it, write it, sing it, swing to it, yodel it, we wrote it, that's all we wanted to do. Many thanks to John Taylor Williams for mastering. That's Ryneck Studio, Ryneck Studio at gmail.com. John Taylor Williams is a full-time self-employed audio engineer, producer, composer, and sound designer. In his free time, he makes beer, jewelry, odd musical instruments, and furniture. He likes to meditate, to read, and to cook. Talk to you next week.